evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering tonight, Monday, August 11, 2014. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says more sanctions are on the way after South Sudan's two warring parties failed to meet a deadline to form a transitional government.
We are considering more sanctions against individuals that are undermining the peace process, not allowing humanitarian assistance to get through.
And President Kiir offers the position of second vice president to rebel leader Riek Machar, but nothing more.
My current vice president, Nguyen Khoi James Wani, and Obama will not even know.
My current vice president, James Wani Iga, will remain the vice president. I will make Riek to be my second vice president if he wants to be in my government.
We'll have all these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says her government will consider sanctioning more South Sudanese leaders who obstruct efforts to bring peace to South Sudan. As Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba, the envoy made the remarks as the 60-day deadline set by IGAD for warring parties to reach a peaceful deal expired over the weekend without any progress. Susan Page says her government may impose more sanctions following the failure by the government and the rebels' delegation to form a transitional government of national unity and a permanent ceasefire within 60-day deadline set in June after President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar signed a deal recommitting the two parties to abide by all the agreements signed in January. Under the mediation of the regional bloc, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, South Sudan government and the rebels agreed to form a transitional government of national unity. The deadline for the formation of that government elapsed on Sunday. Page says her government will consider tougher action against individuals who oppose a peaceful settlement to the South Sudan conflict.
We are considering more sanctions against individuals that are undermining the peace process, not allowing humanitarian assistance to get through, that are delaying the talks, anything that is an impediment to the peace process going forward. We are continuing to look at the list, and we are likely to announce some more sanctions because the 60-day deadline has passed.
In May, the United States imposed sanctions on two military South Sudanese leaders. Page says more needs to be done to punish South Sudanese leaders who are standing in the way of peace. She says this time around, the sanctions will be effective.
Prevent people from traveling to the United States. It would prevent them from dealing with business matters with U.S. persons. And, of course, it would freeze any of their assets that they have in the United States. The nature of the sanctions, it would be to perhaps add additional people who are hindering the peace process.
The envoy says the additional sanctions will compel both parties to negotiate in good faith.
Everyone in this region knows that a number of South Sudanese have property and families living in neighboring countries. So where it would have the most impact, that would have an impact because people would feel it. People always feel it when it impacts their families and their wallets.
South Sudan plunged into a political crisis in mid-December after a political dispute within the ruling party, which led to deadly violence which has paralyzed the country. The UN estimates close to 1.5 million people are sheltering in various UN camps in South Sudan, and more than 10,000 others were killed. Ateny Wek Ateny is the spokesman in the office of President Salva Kiir. He describes any new set of sanctions on his government as unfortunate. He says the rebels of the SPLM in opposition are to blame for delays.
The intention of the United States to impose more sanctions to two parties. It is unfortunate simply because the statement of Her Excellency Susan B. Page did not observe the fact that the government has not done anything wrong up to this point, because the 60 days elapsed simply because we walked away from the top in Addis Ababa. And the government is not a party to, if the United States of America as a superpower has to do justice, then they have to look at the behavior of the two warring parties. If the government of South Sudan is placing obstacles and they deserve that sanction.
South Sudan in Focus tried to contact the rebel spokesman for comments on the remarks of U.S. Ambassador Susan Page, but our calls were not returned. The South Sudan Army says it killed more than 30 rebel fighters during fighting in Upper Nile state town of Nasir yesterday. The renewed fighting broke out just days after the two warring parties resumed talks in the Ethiopian capital to try to resolve the conflict and form an interim government. For VOA News, Lucy Pony has this report from Nairobi, where rebels denied attacking government positions.
South Sudan's military accuses rebels of attacking Nasir town on Sunday. Acting SPLA spokesman Joseph Maria Samuel says his side incurred very few casualties.
Yesterday around 5 a.m., rebel forces loyal to Riek Machar have attacked our position in Nasir, but our forces in the ground have stand firm and repulsed the rebel. Yesterday, our sources tell us that they have killed 32 rebels. This is what happened, and in our side, we have 3 soldiers killed in action and 9 other wounded.
But in a statement, the opposition's military spokesman, Lulroy Kong, dismissed the government's account of events. He says it was the government's forces that advanced on the rebels' positions. According to Kong, government forces attempted to advance on the rebel positions at Ketbek, some 2 kilometers southeast of Nasir town, but were repulsed. He insists the government forces wanted to gain more ground and steal food from civilians in the area. Kong says they will continue to drive back any advances towards their positions in Bentiu, Ayod, Malakal and Nasir town centers. He accuses the government of trying to gain more ground before a comprehensive peace agreement is signed. Samuel further accused rebels of mobilizing for more attacks against the government.
We are expecting more attack from them because there was a massive mobilization of rebels around Ayod and Nasir. We are there expecting an attack at any time.
Addressing his supporters upon his arrival from the U.S., President Salva Kiir condemned the attacks and called on the rebels to stop fighting. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
The leaders of South Sudan's warring parties missed yesterday's 60-day deadline to complete discussions on the formation of an interim government of national unity. President Salva Kiir says he is willing to appoint rebel leader Riek Machar as his second vice president in an interim government, but nothing more. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio has the details.
Fresh from his return from the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington, D.C., President Salva Kiir told supporters at Juba International Airport he does not appreciate being forced into accepting arrangements made by the United States over the future of his government.
There is a meeting we held when I left here on 31st July on how we can have a peace agreement. I told them that this thing called interim government that you are imposing on me is not the right way to resolve this conflict. My time in office has not yet ended.
But Mr. Kiir says he will accept the formation of an interim government for the sake of peace. He will not, however, accept a new position of prime minister for Mr. Machar.
My current vice president, and who are James Wani, and Abamoru Naibel Awul.
My current vice president, James Wani Iga, will remain the vice president. I will make Riak to be my second vice president if he wants to be in my government. But if he doesn't want, he must stay out and wait for elections. If he defeats me, he can become the president and everybody agrees with me.
South Sudan's transitional constitution does not provide for the creation of a second vice president position. Humanitarian organizations have warned that nearly 4 million people risk famine if the conflict is not resolved within the next few weeks. President Kiir insists he wants to end the conflict through peaceful means.
We do not want war, even the language of war. We need peace. The problem as regards peace It's like saying you want to clap using one hand. One hand cannot clap. In order to produce sound, two hands must be used.
So far, the peace talks in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, have produced little results. Aside from failing to agree on an interim government, the two sides have come no closer to reaching a peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
That report was written and prepared by Mungume Devs Rakarinj in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
To protect yourself and your family from sickness and disease, it's important to be careful about water. Bottled water is safe to drink and cook with. But if you can't buy it, be sure to purify your water by boiling it or treating it with an approved water sanitation kit. To destroy microorganisms that cause disease or even kill, you need to boil water for at least 5 minutes. Then wait to allow any sediment to settle and let the water cool down before drinking. To help protect you, your children, and your family from sickness, make sure all your water is safe to drink.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the SPLM starts a registration campaign to get a better idea of how many members remain in the ruling party. That story is coming up next.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when, if ever, should customary law be used instead of constitutional law?
Customary law should be used instead of constitutional law. In terms of if the party that were brought together, let's say in a customary wedding, if they have disputes or issues, then they should be settled under customary law.
I guess in circumstances when the customs then will take precedence, like where you have multiracial or multicultural people coming together, then at this point, it would be hard to say we want to use constitutional law and opt for what would be the customary law.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's ruling party, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, has kicked off a registration campaign for members across Central Equatoria State this week. SPLM party officials held a symposium in Juba on Friday to brainstorm on ideas of how to create a modern democratic party. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
Delivering a lecture at the symposium, Vice President James Wani Iga said the purpose of the registration is strengthen and consolidate SPLM as the leading party in the country. Iga, who also serves as SPLM deputy chairperson, acknowledged that some SPLM members have left the party for the opposition or have died in the fighting. He says the registration process, which includes rallies and meetings, will give officials a more accurate figure of how many supporters the party has across Central Equatoria.
We should not assume that these people are with us. Some might have crossed, some might have died, some might have this and that.
Iga says top party officials will hold meetings with supporters from the grassroots up to the national level in the coming weeks. He admits if the SPLM is going to win back widespread support, the party must do more to develop the country's infrastructure and improve the lives of ordinary citizens. Iga says the party must also be open to dialogue and to relate divergent views.
In order to serve the people well, the party, any party, has to strengthen the role of the trade unions, of the youth league, of the Women's Federation and other social organizations, what we term as popular and syndicated organizations.
Helen Denya, who works at the SPLM Secretariat in Juba, says women especially need more help from the government.
Women need proper hospitals, education for their children, security. Women need to be helped in all the areas, you know, especially in these businesses, in the small business, so that they can earn something and help their children with, to take their children to school, to get at least something so that their children can get a better life.
Achui Malith Bangol, the SPLM Secretary for Popular and Syndicated Organizations, says members will be expected to keep track of their party-related activities.
You have a party membership card and you have a party membership book. In this party membership book, there are two things, SPLM principles, and then there are columns whereby if you do something, wherever you have done it, whether you do it to the government or do it to the community or go to SPLM level, they will write down there and then they will mention it in your, and then they stamp. So in future, when you want to compete, that is your CV.
Bangol says through registration, the party will be able to raise money from its members. Iga says part of the ruling party's problem is that existing laws are not being implemented.
Many of these, including we say that commissioners have to be elected. We are not electing commissioners all over Junu.
SPLM officials in Warrap State registered members in their state last month. The SPLM registration campaign moves to Yei County this week. For VOA News, I am Gumedes Rakarinj in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Iraqi President Fayoud Masum has asked Deputy Speaker of Parliament Haider al-Abdadi to form a new government as the country faces the onslaught of Islamic State militants who have overrun much of its northern and western parts with little resistance from outmanned Iraqi forces. Al-Abadi was nominated today for the post by Iraq's main Shiite bloc, the National Alliance. The move comes as incumbent Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has tried to remain in power in defiance of calls from Sunnis, Kurds, and some fellow Shiites to step aside for a less polarizing figure. Earlier today, Iraq's highest court said Mr. Maliki's bloc is the largest in parliament. Mr. Maliki has said that he would file a lawsuit against President Masum for failing to nominate a new prime minister before a Sunday deadline. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has said forming a government is critical for Iraq's stability and urged Mr. Maliki to avoid inflaming the situation. Israel and the Palestinians have started new talks in Cairo aimed at crafting a permanent truce to end fighting in Gaza. The latest three-day Israeli-Palestinian ceasefire held into today as Egypt mediated indirect talks between the warring sides after a month-long conflict that has left more than 2,000 people dead. A spokesman for the Hamas militants, who runs the Gaza shift and shoulder of the group, said he called for the negotiations as the last chance for an agreement. Israeli negotiators are not meeting face-to-face, he says, with the Palestinian delegation because it includes Hamas, which the Jewish state considers a terrorist group. As the negotiators met, Gaza shops and businesses reopened. Residents who had been staying in shelters returned to their homes. But like Hanan Abu Saria, they often found the Israeli airstrikes had left their homes uninhabitable. And finally, NATO Secretary General says the alliance has seen no sign of Russian forces pulling back from the border with Ukraine and that there is a high probability that Moscow will, in fact, intervene militarily in eastern Ukraine. President Vladimir Putin's spokesman, meanwhile, says Russia will send humanitarian aid to eastern Ukraine, quote, if we can agree on details with all the partners, end quote. On Saturday, Ukraine claimed it had thwarted an attempt by Russia to send troops into Ukraine under a supposed agreement with the Red Cross and the guise of peacekeepers with the aim of provoking a large-scale military conflict. Moscow dismissed the allegation as a fairy tale. Meanwhile, a Ukrainian military spokesman said today that government forces were preparing the final stage of retaking Donetsk, the main stronghold of the pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. The UN aid agencies say they are doing what they can to help with the humanitarian needs of much of South Sudanese population. But the challenge are enormous. This comes as officials in Pibor County in Jonglei State say more help is needed. From Juba, Mungumedev Srakarinj has this report for VOA. We are having technical difficulties with that story here in the studio. The UN aid agencies say they are doing what they can to help with the humanitarian needs of much of South Sudanese population, but the challenges are enormous. This comes as officials in Pibor County in Jonglei State say more help is needed. From Juba, Mungumedev Srakarinj has this report for VOA.
Judy Jonglei Boyoris is the information minister for Jonglei State and represents Pibor County in the state parliament. He complains that humanitarian organizations have abandoned thousands of people who are returned to their homes in Pibor now that the county is at peace, following an agreement between Devdi Yau Yau and Juba ending the fighting earlier this year. Boyori says after more than a year of fighting in Pibor, many people are returning and are homeless.
Their houses were burned, so they don't have something to stay with. So they need a lot of things, even food. People did not cultivate simply because of the crisis that all of us were facing.
But the UN's top humanitarian official in South Sudan, Vincent Lele, says humanitarian organizations are doing all they can to help people who are returning to the country. He notes that the UN and NGOs distributed food and other items to people in Pibor in May, and they are still providing veterinary medicines to livestock and other aid.
Assistance on fishing nets is being given. Water and sanitation is being provided as a top priority. Initially, in situations of displacement, shelter identifies.
Lele notes that since the political violence began in December, they have assisted more than 2 million people in Jonglei, Upper Nile, Unity and Lake States, the areas hardest hit by the fighting. Information Minister Boyoris complains that the international community needs to do more to help because Jonglei State does not have enough resources. But the UN's Lele says humanitarian groups are also stretched thin.
Nearly half of the population require assistance. We cannot reach all of them. There isn't enough capacity, there isn't enough resources, there aren't enough supplies.
And Lele says continued fighting around the country makes aid distribution even more difficult. For VOA News, I am Mugumedev Sirwakarinj in Juba.
Nigerian officials say Monday one Ebola case was diagnosed over the weekend, widening the circle of people that have come into contact with the disease. Heather Murdoch reports for VOA from Abuja that Nigeria now has 10 confirmed cases and 177 people known to have had contact with sick patients that are being monitored for signs of the disease.
Every time an Ebola case is diagnosed, the containment clock is reset. If no one that came into contact with the sick person gets sick within 21 days, chances are no one will. Since a Liberian-American financial consultant flew into Lagos from Liberia about 3 weeks ago, the number of new cases has slowly grown, increasing the number of people that may have been exposed. Over the weekend, another patient was diagnosed in apparent connection with the Liberian-American man, says Nigerian Minister of Health, Onabuchi Chukwu.
It was one of the nurses who had primary contact, and when he got here, we then brought her into isolation, and we just tested her over the weekend, and she tested positive.
Ebola has killed nearly 1,000 people since the outbreak began early this year, with all but two deaths in Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. Reports that experimental drugs have appeared to have been successful in treating American and European health workers and missionaries that contracted the disease in West Africa have prompted many Nigerians to demand access to the drugs in case it spreads further. Minister Chukwu.
Nigeria is actually, as of now, reaching out to various laboratories, various governments, including the U.S. state governments, to see how some of these untried but drugs and vaccines that seem to hold out some hope could also be deployed in Nigeria. We're in touch.
The World Health Organization says it expects a vaccine to be developed by 2015, but currently there is no known cure. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan Friday pledged $11.7 million to try to stop the spread in Nigeria and $3.5 million to help other countries fight off the disease. Meanwhile, Nigerian officials continue a massive communications campaign to squash the equally massive rumor mill. Local news reports illnesses all over the country from people drinking too much salt water or eating too much of certain fruits, falsely believing it will prevent Ebola. Officials speak publicly daily about how to keep from getting Ebola, which is transmitted through contact with bodily fluids, like blood, urine, or sweat. It cannot be transmitted through air, the minister says, but
if you are in close contact and someone who is suffering from it is sneezing or coughing into your face, you could also get it because the droplets will touch you. So that close contact makes it, you know, why that's why some people say it's not airborne, that you need that close contact.
He urges people to wash their hands frequently, especially after touching another person, and says so far in Nigeria, the disease has not spread out of Lagos, a megacity of 21 million people, which is often called the heartbeat of the Nigerian economy. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
That's our show for this Monday. We apologize for the technical glitches we have had in this show, but we are leaving you with a nice song, Pikawa Nyambe, by a Malawian superstar, Lucis Banda. We have been listening to Lucas Banda with the song Pikawa Nyambe. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.